Think positively and believe in yourself. That is our mantra as we welcome you to What We Positively Believe. Will be one of the most interesting episodes among the more than 200 that we have produced for Musings on Golf. Kelly Elbin welcoming you back to our weekly gathering, joined as always by Jenna Self, our executive producer. And our special guest is PGA of America professional Adam Schreiber, who has helped install what? A deeper sense of self-belief and positive thinking for his top student, J.J. Spahn, who will defend his U.S. Open title next week at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club on Long Island in New York. Have to tell you that Adam is unique among the many instructors, PGA professionals with whom I've talked over the years. I think you'll agree after you hear that interview, very passionate and very loyal to his students. He has a relatively small stable of players with whom he works. JJ is at the top of that list. And when he's out there on tour, which is a lot, he is really giving it his all for those players. And when JJ Spahn made that long putt last year at Oakmont Country Club to clinch the U.S. Open title, it set off a very humorous viral video that included Adam Schreiber, and we'll talk about that. And he talks about that it's okay to fail, right? It's okay to fail, something that a lot of us, when we tee it up, we struggle, we get frustrated. He even mentions that the role that Mother Nature played in the final round of the U.S. Open last year when it started to rain and play was halted. And he had about an hour where he was able to let J.J. Spahn kind of vent because J.J. wasn't playing well at that time. And then Adam proceeded to kind of provide him with some thoughts, some beliefs, some ways of thinking that indeed helped capture J.J.'s first major championship. It comes in a lot of forms, folks. Sometimes for great players, the belief comes in post-it notes. And that's one of the things that Nellie Korda credits for her winning the U.S. Women's Open at Riviera Country Club on Sunday. She says that she travels with post-it notes that she sticks on her mirror at home and on the road to put positive notes to reinforce that, you know, it's going to be a great day. She's hitting the ball well. Hang in there. It may get tough, but you can win this. You can play. You can battle through it. And sure enough, she's now become the youngest American with four LPGA majors since Mickey Wright in 1960. And it all came down. You know, it's hard. It's hard because she was expected to win. She won the Chevron Championship earlier this year, the first major on the LPGA schedule. She was expected to win at Riviera. What a great scene that was for the U.S. Women's Open. And that's a big internal battle, but she did it. And it was a dream come true for her to win the U.S. Women's Open presented by Ally. And let's hear what it meant, what Nellie Korda had to say after that 2-foot, 10-inch putt went into the cup, and she could finally breathe a sigh of relief because a dream had finally come true.
That 14-year-old girl that stepped on the range at Sabonics in 2013, I mean, her dream has just come true sitting next to this trophy right now. I mean, it's really hard to put into words. You know, this week was definitely a grind. I don't even feel like I had my B game. I was just grinding out there, and that's what I guess major championships are all about, right? It doesn't matter if you have your B or C game, you have to be there mentally.
It's so true, and it's so often the case in major golf championships that you do have to grind. It's just the very nature of the highest of pressures on the toughest of golf courses. And congratulations to Nellie Korda. It's great for golf again. It's great for her. And now we start talking about can she win all five of the LPGA's major championships in one season? We'll find out later this month if she can win her third straight at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship at Hazeltine National outside of Minneapolis. Now, the Memorial Tournament presented by Workday is not a major championship, but it is right up there among the premier events on the PGA Tour. And for JT Poston to secure at the end, after such an up-and-down round of golf, his fourth title on the PGA Tour, and to be able to shake Jack Nicklaus's hand, easily the greatest victory of his career. Topsy-turvy. I mean, JT had a four-shot lead early in the fourth round, the final round at Muirfield Village, and he gave it all away. Then he started hitting a couple of shots, made a few putts, got it back, and then hit a fantastic approach shot on the 18th hole in regulation, made birdie, and then he won it in sudden death. As he talked about, he was quoted as saying, "A lot of people believing in me. That's part of why I win." He was talking about his wife. He said, "It's a lot of hard work, a lot of people believing in me when I may not have myself, and starting with this one," meaning his wife, Kelly. Let's hear more from JT Poston about winning the Memorial Tournament presented by Workday.
Just incredibly proud, incredibly humbled. This is one of the events that we have circled on our calendar at the start of the year every year, and it just feels amazing to get it done and just to be a part of the rich history here. We were talking about the past winners. It's a good bunch, and to be able to add my name to that list is incredible.
What a feeling that must be indeed. And for it to be the 50th Memorial Tournament, something that JT Poston will cherish for the rest of his life. Before we close here and head into the interview with Adam Schreiber, what a week for Logan Riley, freshman at Auburn University. Not only did he help the Tigers win another national championship, but during the longest day in golf, the 36-hole qualifier on Monday for the U.S. Open, he made it. He was one of those who have now advanced to play next week at Shinnecock Hills for the 126th U.S. Open Championship. This is a talented kid. There's so many good players out there. For Logan Riley to have contributed the way he did and now being doing it on his own going into the U.S. Open, congratulations to him and to all who have qualified. It is what makes the U.S. Open special, right? If your game is good enough, you have a chance. And boy, some great drama on that longest day in golf. Before we do go, William and Harry Golf has been a great partner of ours here at Musings on Golf. And Fred Funk is someone who really enjoys wearing them. I reached out to Fred and I wanted to get a thought from him as to what it really stands out about William and Harry Golf and their shoes. And he wrote me back and said, "I'd love for you to say this on my behalf." So as Fred read it to me, and I'll read it to you, he said, "I'm really impressed with the performance, comfort, and style of William and Harry golf shoes. If you haven't already, give them a try. You'll really be glad you did." Pretty good testimonial from a tremendous player. 8 wins on the PGA Tour. Thank you, Fred. And remember, once again, please subscribe and like us when you go to Spotify, when you go to Apple Podcasts, wherever you enjoy your favorite. And of course, Musings on Golf is your favorite podcast. All right, right after our friends from William and Harry Golf and from the Friars Golf Club, really fascinating, fun, informative interview with Adam Schreiber, the coach of U.S. Open champion J.J. Spaun. This Father's Day, give Dad something he'll carry for years to come: the William and Harry Whole Grain Calfskin Leather Weekender Duffel is crafted for golf trips, weekend escapes, private club weekends, business travel, and elevated everyday carry. With timeless styling and premium craftsmanship, the supple full grain calfskin leather is more than a travel bag. It's a statement piece for the modern gentleman. Structured, refined, and designed to travel beautifully, each Weekender also includes a protective dust bag for the ultimate luxury experience. Now, for Father's Day, the Leather Weekender Duffel is available for only $385. Visit williamandharry.com today and give Dad a gift that travels as well as he does. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses. So all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. In just over a week at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club, J.J. Spahn will begin defense of the U.S. Open Golf Championship title that he earned a year ago at Oakmont Country Club. Once again, our special guest will be alongside his prized pupil. He is a Golf Digest Top 50 instructor, a Golf Magazine Top 100 instructor, a two-time Michigan PGA Section Teacher of the Year, and folks, I guarantee that no swing coach has ever enjoyed seeing his guy win a major golf championship more than PGA of America professional Adam Schreiber. Adam, welcome to Musings on Golf. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Kelly.
Thank you, Adam. As we record this, the day after the Memorial Tournament, it was a long week in Dublin, Ohio. Yeah. We very much appreciate your time. You told Janice and me before we went on that you got in at 3 a.m. I'm sure you're looking forward to a nice little break before the week of the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I am. This is, the guys, I mean, my other squad that's in Canada is probably disappointed in me for not being there, but it's my first week off since January. So I'm trying to prime the pump for a nice run for the end of the season and, you know, help everybody push through their goals. It's a hard time in golf. You know, especially like I've had 12 first timers make it, and I'm super proud of that or something like that. And, I'm big on the underdog, and yeah, that's a tough time to be the underdog for sure. The window's smaller than ever. So,
Adam, you were saying about your squad, if you want to call them that, of instructors up in Canada. Explain that to me.
I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but the joke out there is that there's a PGA tour and a PGB tour right now, you know, and it's kind of true, you know, yeah, and I mean, obviously there's opportunity to jump to the highest level, but like I'm saying, that window is smaller than ever. Yeah. I got three other guys that are on the B tour, and Sam Ryder, Bo Hossler, and Dylan Wu are all playing in Canada. And, you know, I take pride in what I do, and I like to help the guys, and, you know, they're all really good players and really good guys.
Hey, Adam, I hear you loud and clear. I live here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, where the Honda Classic just down the street was a preeminent tour event for a long time. And then all of a sudden, because of scheduling, Honda said, we're not investing the money because no one is showing up. It's a B-level event. And Cognizant has come along. It's still played on a very good golf course, but there's nowhere near the quality of the field. It's just a very different vibe.
Yeah, and it's to even blame the players, right? Because they've 3 weeks after that are Bay Hill players and Hilton Head, which are all $20 million plus purses.
Sure.
That you better have it together for. And you can't play them all, man. And I don't think the players love PGA National, you know, for the most part. I mean, especially the ball strikers, place is hard. Oh, and, yeah, you know, guys love it when, you know, doesn't take a million under to win usually and stuff like that. So,
well, I think you're right. I think it was a good prep almost for Mr. Palmer's event and for the players. But you're right, with those three stacked right behind it, it is very much not a have and have not, but I like the way you say it. It's an A level, a B level, and that's very much where Brian Rolapp is taking the tour.
Toughest thing about golf too, you know, like I came from the wrong side of the tracks, and I guess you could say, and I love the sport and everything it does, the integrity it teaches. You hit the nail on the head. The whole have and have not thing really bugs me more than probably most.
We're going to talk about your upbringing and how you got involved in golf growing up in Hollywood, not California, but Hollywood, Florida. We're certainly going to look ahead to the U.S. Open and JJ defending at Shinnecock Hills next week. But I've got to go back first to that time, that an incredibly fun video that went viral immediately. So JJ makes the 64-foot birdie putt, the greatest walk-off putt, it has to be in the history of a U.S. Open. And there's you and Josh Gregory, his short game coach, and just the intensity of that moment. And Josh is grabbing you. He's like, dude, listen to me. Talk about that just unbridled joy, the emotion, everything that came out of that.
You know, I say this all the time. It's hard to know what our lives are like out there. You know, when you're traveling 25 plus weeks a year, and sometimes crazy guys like me travel even more. I mean, the only people that really know what your life's like are the people you're traveling with and are going through the same struggles you're going through. And we all give up and sacrifice so much, man, so much for this life, you know, and you wonder if you're doing the right thing and you're not doing the right thing. And you also get your ass kicked. You lose a lot more than you win. So when you get a moment like that, man, I'm, you know, I had some of those moments with Anthony Kim way back when and really didn't enjoy them to the level that I should have, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just came out, man. It was, yeah.
Well, that perspective, special. Right? Of all days on the road and to have it with that kind of magical, crazy putt, the way he played those last few holes, for goodness sakes, almost driving the green at 17, right?
Almost made it. Yeah, it drove the green, almost cashed the tee shot. Yeah, you know what's weird about that whole thing is I wasn't nervous on the full swings at all, but I was kind of pooping my pants on the putt. So, because that's not really my department. And
yeah,
man, it was a brutal putt, you know? Like, I mean, you know, you're three putting that far more times than you're ever making it, for sure.
Yeah.
And you're probably three putting it, you know, 50% of the time, I would say. You know,
I know that JJ had missed the cut the week before. This is last year at Memorial. You know, Josh handles the short game, you're handling full swing, and you've got the player. How did you guys feel in general going into Oakmont?
Yeah, you know what was funny is I wasn't supposed to go to Memorial. I was supposed to have actually this week at home and then go to Canada for the B squad the next week.
Yeah.
That was kind of our plan. Like, I can't be with you every week, bro. I got to try and figure this out. And I was driving back from wherever we had played, San Antonio, because I drive an Airstream. I pull an Airstream. So, I traveled with a 17-year-old dog. It's a long story, but that was the whole reason behind it. And I'm driving back, and I'm like, man, he's not clear on what he needs to do. He's got a week off. He's going to have a week off after Memorial. I need to stop in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at least. And just make sure he knows what to do the next week. Like, I know, you know, he's not, I don't know. He doesn't, it's funny how guys get it in their head. They're not going to play good at certain courses, but he had never played good at Memorial. So it wasn't, you know, super pumped about being there. We ended up missing the cut by a shot, and it was more putting than it was full swing. But he got really clear on what he needed to do for Oakmont. And, you know, I started planting the seed because we had a bunch of close calls, cognizant the players, obviously, and he was playing really nice all year. I mean, Hawaii at the start of the year really kind of blew it. And I'm like, every time we blew it, I'm like, there's no mistakes or just lessons. This is going to come back to us in a bigger, more meaningful situation. And I fully believe that if you have the right mindset, you know, it's like, it's all how perspective, right? I've been through a lot in my life, and that makes you, I don't know if it makes you, but it helps keep in positive perspective and putting positive spins on what other people might think are not positive experiences.
Did JJ feel like, hey guys, this golf course, I like the way my game matches up?
He was swinging great, had a really good week off, you know, sent me swings during the week. He's like, how's this look? I said, it looks like the 2025 U.S. Open winner. And I just kept on subliminally planting the seeds as much as I could. And because I know he has ability. Like, the hard thing, JJ's such a humble guy that he just doesn't know how good he really is, man. You know, you listen to all the other guys, they look at his golf swing, they're like, oh my God, you know, and everybody calls him a flusher and all the other guys, you know. He continues to be humble, JJ, wanting, like a lot of us, being a perfectionist, wanting to find the flaw in everything we do. Yeah, so he, you know, we got off the range session Thursday, honestly, and it was the best warm-up he had by far all year. I don't think he missed one shot, you know, and I'm like paying attention, obviously, and we walk into the cart to ride to the first tee, and he's like, dude, I need a Lou Holtzstock. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I need a Lou Holtzstock. I'm like, bro, that was the best warm-up you've had all year. He's like, yeah, but it's Oakmont. You know, I could flush all day and shoot 85. Yeah, you're right. You could. I said, so that, you know, and I don't even know where it came from. I said, but you're going to get some bounces and the ball's not going to do what you think it should do. It's, you're going to get a gust. It happens all the time. And yeah. I said, the choice is up to you. You can either react or respond, and you know what the right thing to do is. And, you know, it's cool to see, man. You know, and it's like, I think everything was a process. You know, if it had been our first week in contention, we don't get it done. Yeah. You know, but he had blown it in Hawaii, been in contention at Cognizant, lost to Rory at the Players, did everything right there, you know. And, yeah, he gets it, you know. I feel like he crossed a big mental hurdle on understanding that you don't control the outcome, you know, and I'm not a robot. I can't control the outcome. I'm checking every box I can in preparation. Kid works really hard, and he's uber talented. And you want to over control it in those, you know, situations for sure. And we all know that's, you can't over control a motor skill, man, you know, and it's just such a fine line, right? So yeah, I think that's been the biggest thing for him is, you know, the ability to let go, the understanding, the ability to give himself the permission to fail. I hear him talk about it all the time. You know, we've talked about that. I think I introduced that to him maybe, but I think that's every great athlete needs the permission to fail if they're ever going to unlock their talents.
Are there similarities? You know, you mentioned about his humility. Are there similarities between his traits that way and Aaron Rye, who won the PGA Championship?
I think so. You know, I don't know Aaron incredibly well. He's about as nice a guy as there is. You know, I don't think either one of, I think both of them came from humble upbringings, you know, have a great appreciation for the sport and had a fight maybe a little harder than the entitled one or the one with more opportunity anyway.
You talked about that that preparation, the mindset and so forth, but you also had a variable there with that weather delay, and you've talked about that being a massive reset. It doesn't happen often, but what did you two, you had time, what did you talk about with him? How much time did you have together during that delay?
Yeah, we had probably almost an hour, I think. I can't remember exactly, at least 45.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing I did was let him vent. Dude, because those were some of the worst breaks I've ever seen him. And, you know, I'm trying to convince the kid that he doesn't get bad breaks, right? Because every professional golfer thinks they're the most unluckiest person in the world. Every one of them. More unlucky than you and, you know, the next guy and whatever.
Of course.
They all believe that. I swear to God, dude, it's unreal. But in that case, oh my gosh, dude. Like, hit the break on two and then followed up by hitting the rake on the par five is like,
yes,
can we be, you know, can we get hosed anymore? And, you know, I first thing I did was agree with him. He's like, dude, I know you talk to me all the time about this, thinking I get the worst breaks, but those were awful. I'm like, bro, you are 100% right. That golf course just ripped you a new one. Like, you know, I can't disagree with any of that. And I said, but, you know, and then after he calmed down and he actually shared more, he's like, you know, I even started off doing this today, but everybody blew me up last night. He's like, I've been doing a really good job of getting my number, committing to a shot, figuring the start line, letting go. and accepting whatever happens. And he said, as soon as I got that bounce on two, I started guiding it and trying to over-control the outcome. And dude, like, what golfer shares that with you first off? Yeah, as a right. coach, like, that's so rare, man. If you've done what I do, like, they all want to seem like Superman and they don't let you in, right? And
but that shield,
yeah, you need that to be able to help them as much as possible, right? When I think about that, that just shows like an incredible trust, and I think it's good, you know. Obviously, it helped, you know, let them vet and said, I can tell you one thing, if you keep doing that, you got 10 holes left, and if you keep doing that, you're not going to like yourself tomorrow. You know, I said, but also we'd have taken four back with 10 to play walking to the tee on Thursday, wouldn't we? You know, and I said, you got 10 holes to let it go and have no regrets and trust all the preparation and everything you've been doing. See what happens, bro. You know, and damn if you didn't do it. So it was cool. You know,
all right, let's look ahead to this year. And it's been an interesting year for him. He won at Valero Texas Open in early April. JJ has missed the cut in the first two majors. But of late, Adam Schreiber, he's had good finishes. What, four top 15s in his last five starts, tied for 12th on Sunday at Memorial. In your opinion, where's his game now going into his defense at Shinnecock Hills?
Yeah, he's as more ready than he's been all year. And dude, his game's as good as it's ever been. Mm. We're fighting, I think, you know, post-major expectations, if I have to be perfectly honest. And he put way too much pressure on himself, and it's all new territory for all of us.
Sure.
And it's, you know, that's the challenge we have, nothing more, really. The game's still great. He hasn't lost it. He's working as hard as ever. And that's the grace I give him. Like, bro, if you were being lazy and it was going to your head, I'd fully let you know and put my foot right up your butt, but you're not. You're checking every box. Golf's hard, you know? As soon as you get back to the mindset that got us here, we're going to unlock it again. You know, like, it's funny because, like, giving himself the permission to fail allowed him to succeed.
Yeah.
Success makes that harder to keep doing, you know, in a messed up way, right? And the expectations get harder, and then it's harder to let go. So that's the battle we're facing. And, you know, if he wasn't working hard enough, it'd be really hard. But he wants it, man. He works really hard. He's a great kid. He puts golf in the box it belongs in, gets that it's just golf. Like, he's got a bit of Scotty in him that way.
Yeah.
And that's awesome, you know?
It keeps going back to the mental side, the psychology. Mm-hmm. You know, Adam, we've been really fortunate here at Musings on Golf. We've had some incredible guest, but by far the most listened to guest that we've had has been Dr. Bob Rotella.
Really?
And I think in large part because people can relate to things that
yeah.
Dr. Rotella talks about, because whether it's the guy playing once a week or the elite player, the game's tough enough and you put the mind in there and there's a lot of devils you're dealing with and a lot of you're trying to overcome.
Yeah. I mean, Doc's amazing. And I use a lot of that, you know, and I feel very, very fortunate to have been around, you know, like, I mean, the guys that have helped me from where I came from and the experiences I've been able to have around, you know, Nick Price was one of my best friends when I worked for Lead, and, you know, to like share his experiences and understand how he gets it done and then to be involved in the whole Faldo role. And, you know, I mean, Anthony Kim could be a sports psychologist, if you ask me. He, like, has such good perspective on where golf belongs, especially going through everything he's gone through in his life, that feel like every highly skilled golfer needs the most help, you know? And if you really discover, if you're really old and seen as much golf as I have and you pay attention, you figure out that the guys that are really comfortable in their own skin, know who they are, not trying to be anything they aren't, are the ones that play at their highest potential.
Adam Schreiber, who's done such a terrific job as the instructor for J.J. Spahn, among other players, joining us here on Musings on Golf. You know, I send you the questions in advance and sort of have a certain order, but you've mentioned a few things already. I want to kind of go there. We talked about your origin of getting into the game growing up in Hollywood, Florida. you were not exactly in any privileged way into the game. And I wonder if you could talk about how golf entered your life, Adam, and then also kind of maybe segue. You did a lot of work for David Ledbetter. How that came in with instruction being such a big part of what you do.
Yeah, well, I mean, my upbringing, my dad passed when I was 13. I was raised by a single mom. I had a muni in my hometown that costs $12 a year to be a member. Oh. And it cost me 56 cents to play after 3 o'clock in the summer. Yeah, so my mom would give me a buck. She taught summer school, so she's trying to support four kids. I'm the youngest of four. And she taught summer school. You can imagine in the 70s, that's not a lot of income. And so she dropped me at the muni first, or actually it was YMCA program. So I think there were $20 for 6 weeks or something like that, right? So it's cheaper than a babysitter. So I go from hoops to tennis to swimming, and I'd end up at the golf course. And it was a funny story because the first year I only had one club, and I was a really good athlete, or at least I thought I was. And the guy that taught it was a women's coach at Auburn. Bud Marcy was the guy's name. I can still remember his name. So I'm like 10 years old, 11 years old or something like that. I got a 7-iron, and he takes three kids to play, 12 kids in the class, right? Or not every day, twice a week. And the thing goes on for 6 weeks, and the whole first year goes by and I don't get picked. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. I'm easily the best athlete of all these kids, you know, in my head. And I didn't get picked. And I was so clueless. I didn't realize this because I had one club.
You literally just had one golf club?
I had one golf club. I did everything with a 7-iron. I was so clueless, man. And, I went back for the second year of that program, and after the first class, he's like, if you can play this afternoon, you can come play with us. So I called my mom at summer school, and I'm like, Mom, I finally got picked to play. She knew how bad it bothered me. She's like, that's awesome. Go have fun. Yeah, but I only have one club. So there's a place called the Club Shop on Dixie Highway in Hollywood, Florida. They actually made a 6-wood for Raymond Floyd when he won the Masters. And I ended up working there too. But, we go to the club shop and they have a dollar barrel where you can pick up clubs for a buck each. So I got to pick up three or four more clubs. Yeah, three more clubs and a putter. So I got like a 3-wood, 9-iron, long iron, and a putter. And so I had four or five clubs now. And she looked at those canvas bags. You know how they had those canvas carry bags when we were growing up?
Oh, yeah.
And on the wall, and it was like $19. And she's like, I can't afford that, but I can make you one in 5 minutes.
Wow.
So she stopped at a and this is all on her lunch break from teaching summer school. So she stops at a fabric store on the way back to our house, buys a piece of canvas, puts two clothes hangers together and sews this thing together on her Singer sewing machine, threw a belt on for the strap, and off I went. Didn't have a ball pocket. I must have had those like blue gym shorts where you didn't have pockets way back when when I was a kid. I remember coming up to the tee and I have to dump the tees out in my bag, and then I'd stuff everything back in the bag. I mean, can you be more clueless? And I won tournaments with this golf bag. It was hilarious. But I mean, I wish I still had it. I don't know what happened to it, but yeah. So that's,
and you played that's a lot. You'd go and play 36 holes a day. That would become a normal time for you, right?
Playing golf. I saved that. She gave me a dollar when I went to the course, and I saved 44 cents for 2 years to buy a set of clubs. And there was a guy that I was a big basketball guy when I was growing up. And there was a guy that was basketball coach, and he was one of the first black guys to play on tour, named Mickey Dillard. He was a massive influence on me. And Mickey had these Hogan producer woods and director irons. And I went to the club shop, and man, I think it was $175 for the irons and maybe $75 for the woods. And I was saving that piggy bank every day until I got to that number, and couldn't wait to go grab those bad boys and be just like Mickey. You know, it was hilarious. But yeah, so I eventually got real clubs and, you know, worked my way up the ladder.
Yeah.
Like there's a bunch of coaches, cops, firemen. I mean, it was a really unique dynamic at the Muni. Like there was about 40 guys that played together that traveled to Scotland every 2 years. A handful of them were millionaires. Some of them were, you know, dirt poor.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell the difference, you know, and they were all just as close as can be and just good people. And so they took me into this group. And when I turned pro, they all raised, I remember it was $4,000 to go play. And I did like 4 years on 4 grand playing the mini tours.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was, I think they gave me a pickup truck too. Well, they did. They gave me a Mazda pickup truck and $4,000 and said, go get it, boy. Yeah, but I mean, I was the best, man. You know, some of my best memories in my life, the happiest times, and you know, enjoying the journey, I think, is really, really important.
Adam, I am really enjoying sharing this journey with you through this interview. Let's take a quick break, hear from our good friends at William and Harry Golf, and get right back to the end of our conversation. This Father's Day, give Dad something he'll carry for years to come. The William and Harry Whole Grain Calfskin Leather Weekender Duffel is crafted for golf trips, weekend escapes, private club weekends, business travel, and elevated everyday carry. With timeless styling and premium craftsmanship, the supple full-grain calfskin leather is more than a travel bag. It's a statement piece for the modern gentleman. Structured, refined, and designed to travel beautifully, each Weekender also includes a protective dust bag for the ultimate luxury experience. Now, for Father's Day, the Leather Weekender Duffel is available for only $385. Visit williamandharry.com today and give Dad a gift that travels as well as he does. My sense is that you, at least in hearing what you're saying, you and JJ are compatible that way. That journey you talk about, and I mean, JJ was not exactly a big time junior golfer by any means, right?
No, JJ talks about how his dad would drop him at the course and then pick him up at dark. You
Yeah.
know, it's just a way of keeping him out of trouble and didn't really know if he was, they didn't think he was any good, you know, or didn't really know if he was any good and just let him do his thing, you know. And yeah, I think we have a lot of similarities there. And
You taught at the David Ledbetter schools, and then how did you and JJ form? How long have you been his primary instructor?
he had the lead at Memphis first 3 days and then shot 80 something and maybe 80 the final round. That was the first week I worked with him. So he just, I've known him for forever. First, like Sam Ryder is one of my underdogs that I brought out there, I feel like, you know. And
Yeah.
Sam was playing in Canada, and I used to love to caddy from them guys at least a handful of times each year to try and figure out if they knew how to play golf, you know, different than golf swing, you know, managing their game and really trying to help them from that perspective and preparation perspective. Anyways, we're playing somewhere, and he's paired with Sam Ryder. It's somewhere early in the Canadian tour, trying to get Sam. This is a, you know, he made $5,000 on the Canadian tour the year before when he asked me for help. But what's cool is I watched him birdie like his last two or three to keep his card. He was the last guy to keep his card. And I'm like, you can't teach that. I can teach this kid to swing, but you can't teach the cojones that takes to do that, you know? So I was like, all right, I'll take a flyer on this kid and see if I can actually help him. And so we're playing with JJ, and he's like, dude, this guy's the leading money winner. And he missed every cut last year. And he's like, I don't know. You know, Sam, I mean, they're all like a little fragile, I feel like, you know? And anyway, so we play like 7 holes. And I mean, dude, he's hit a high fade when it called for a high fade. He's hit a low draw when it called for a low draw. He's, you know, hit it like he's hit all the right shots through the first 7 holes. And I'm really paying attention. And Sam's like, so what do you think? I'm like, bro, I love this kid's game. Talk about somebody's bubble being bursted. So,
Right,
like, Kim
right.
was so disappointed in my answer. But, and I share that story with JJ. But yeah, so, I mean, I've known him since way back when, the Canadian Tour days, which got to be 12, 13, 14 years ago, something like that. But I probably started helping him about 4 years ago for the first time, 4 or 5 years ago.
I know you said you've been out since January. Does that mean are you on tour pretty much every week? How do you,
So I
is that
had
your
an old
perfect?
lab that was 17 years old that I travel with. So it wasn't like, my youngest moved out of the house. So I was kind of stuck out there traveling with him. And then it's just worked out the way we got a PGA and PGB tour right now. It's by choice. It's probably not the smartest choice for other relationships in my life, but I just care. And damn me for doing it. I think it's going to change next year where we actually have an off season. And, even if I traveled the whole season, it wouldn't be anything like this year. So, need to be a little bit better and kinder to myself because I don't want to just be about work. I mean, look at what's behind me. You got to have time to enjoy some of that.
I told you before when I was back in the 90s when I was involved with PGA Magazine and living outside of Detroit, it took many trips up to Northern Michigan where you live. And you're the director of instruction at Lockenheath Golf Club in Williamsburg, Michigan. How do you balance that? How does a top rated instructor at a club balance that work with being on tour so much?
My club has been so good to me. I mean, I have a young instructor that kind of teaches like I teach. So if anybody wants my style, and honestly, like, I don't think lessons work. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but you look at the best players in the world, they want their coaches out there at least once or twice a month,
Sure.
and they're the best in the world. Like, what makes you think you can take one lesson a season and actually get better? Seriously? I think setting up training programs, having people understand what they need to do to improve, both from a technical standpoint, which science has helped a lot with that, and then from a coaching standpoint, just where to put their time in. You suck at chipping, buddy. Did you realize that? So many people can't see the forest through the trees when it comes to their own game. So it's a matter of putting, it's a blend. And I think if you set up, like, I feel like I can guarantee anybody improvement if they check the boxes for the program I set up for them.
And obviously, each program is individual.
Going to be you.
It has to be unique. I wonder, I've read you're a big proponent of teaching golf in what it, I guess you could call it movement patterns that are relatable to other sports, right? I know JJ was a really good skateboarder when he was a kid. You even call that sort of his superpower. So whether it's skateboarding, he's a good basketball player, what have you, how do you then morph that, meld that into what matters on the golf course and the golf swing?
So, like, for me, like, I don't have Butch's Rolodex of, his dad playing the tour and talking to thousands of tour players and all these potential fields to go through. And I had self-discovery helping Anthony Kim. So, like, I've been doing biomechanics and biomechanical analysis for as long as anybody I know, right? So it's just a insight to how efficiently you move, right? And trying to teach a player to move more efficiently, like Anthony Kim swore his hips turned opposite directions of his shoulders on the backswing and the downswing. Okay.
Okay. Is that what he felt?
That's
Is that
what
what
he
he said he
felt
felt?
by training in the gym. So I don't know how much you know about AP force, which is like the new modern term.
No, I don't.
AP force is like your foot pushes forward to make your body turn the other direction. Like, the force into the ground is basically opposite the rotation. I feel like that's a big duh factor for me, honestly. But that's what he was feeling, and he thought it was his hips. And I'm like, bro, it doesn't look like that to me. Does it look like that to you? He's like, no, but I swear that's what I feel.
Yeah,
And,
sure.
that's what he thought he was doing in his golf swing. And I thought that golf swing was pretty dang good. So, in that, I mean, I feel like I'm a really creative guy, but I couldn't have come up with something that crazy. So I've tried to create what I call mousetraps. Like, if you do this or that poorly in your swing, here's a way to force efficiency by throwing medicine ball. Here's a way to force efficiency through your feet by balancing on apparatus. Here's a way to force efficiency by using the resistance of cables. Because to me, the performance world uses several tools. They use weight, they use resistance, they use unstable, and they confine time. If it's like in those four principles, they force efficiency. So I've just tried to adapt those principles to golf, create a program for you. You figure out what it feels like, you know, because I can't get in your body. I don't know what you feel when you do it properly. So I want you to have confidence, and I want to show you through science, this is better. Through video, this is better. Through the room for error, which is what we're trying to create at the bottom for everybody, it's better. So if I can do that, then, you know, off to the races we hopefully go. JJ's feel has been a lot to skateboarding and, you know, using the ground more. We discovered this two off seasons ago. His legs are by far the strongest part of his body. Kid got really strong legs. And then his awareness through his feet is amazing, you know. And I skateboarded, surfed a little bit as a kid, snowboard still. So I feel like I'm the jack of all trades, master of none, to diss myself, but I've played about every sport. So I understand the ones I haven't played at a pretty high level. So I feel like, you know, adapting an athlete to what they do well is my strength. And tapping into, this is what you do well already, Kelly. This is the downside of that, because everything has a positive and negative. This is how we can limit the downside and max out the upside. And that's all we're trying to do, you know?
So it's hard. It is. Adam Shriver joining us on Musings on Golf. When you've put that program in place and you've been working with a player for a long time, in the case of J.J. Spahn, I'm wondering, and you were saying that you know, you've got to be out there more than a couple times a month. How often are you out there, and are you working with – let's just focus on J.J. because he's our national champion. He's our reigning champion. Are you working with him on the range every day? Are you following all of his practice rounds? Is it a constant – are there times when he's like, dude, I'm good. I need a little – I can handle this for a short period of time. How does that interaction work?
Yeah, no, he's pretty good. He likes me for the noodle stuff as much as anything, if you want to know the truth.
Okay.
For helping his head, because he trusted me a lot then. Like, you know, like I told him this week right now, like, we've got a formula. It's far different than this time last year. Like, he's doing 3 or 4 drills in his warm-up. And they keep his swing kind of where it needs to be.
What's he doing? Drills he's doing?
So he does what we call a start forward. So I don't know, you start a couple feet in front of the golf ball and swing it back fast over the ball.
Okay.
Like, he does this purposely at a tempo that he wouldn't swing at. And that helps stabilize his lower half, right? Just through the speed. And then he uses his lower to change direction against that speed. So it's just like trying to, like, that's 101 for Shribes. Okay. And then he does another one where he hits pausing left arm parallel to the ground. Okay. So his tendency is to have a little bit too much lower half, opposite the average Joe, right? All these guys, for the most part, stuck, lower half's too explosive, upper half doesn't keep up with it. You know, they get stuck and underneath, right? So he gets a little too much side bend, a little too much tilt when he goes bad, a little too much maybe separation or slide, if you will, and not enough deceleration and big block snapping on top of little block. So, like, that's part of the skateboard trick, okay? Like, you cannot have lower leave upper and stay on the board. I know that much. Like, any snowboard trick, skateboard trick, any movement on a surfboard, upper body and lower body need to talk to each other. So, like, that's where I feel like we've been able to dial it a little bit through the gym stuff being better, just through the understanding. Yeah, so he does a left arm parallel from there. It just, if he tilts, he's going to fat it or thin it. So he hits it from a pause position and eventually busts him from there, you know. And then we actually use a ball between his arms at the top. club wants to get a little long and crossy at the top at times. So the ball kind of like just keeps his hands out to the right side, keeps the width. I like the club, like, I like it on plane for where it is in the swing, if you will. Like, I don't like a lot of shallowing, especially for a kid like at JJ's build. Like, if you were taller, it might be a different story. His peak speed is through rotation. Really strong legs, ability to rotate, gonna not have as much vertical, say, as a 6'5" guy. Without the vertical, you won't have as probably as much horizontal then. So it's like, to me, you got to understand builds and what peaks performance for that player. Especially like one of your questions was about science. Like, I mean, I think cell phones are misused all the time for video.
How so?
Or misused from the top, from the start. I mean, you get the wrong camera angle, it can make it. Boy, I can show you how your swing shallows without it shallowing. Flip a camera angle on you. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to go down rabbit holes that you should never go down. And I feel like, TrackMan was the next thing, filled up chiropractor's office, guys trying to get the right smash at the bottom, having no clue how to do it. And now like force plates and biomechanical with sports box. I mean, dude, I've been doing that for 20 years. That's the latest thing on the block. Just got to understand it. You got to learn it first, and then there's, to me, like, there's no one model, but there's your model and my model, and they need to match up for what we do well. So I just, yeah. Technology can be used as an incredibly helpful tool, and it can be misused. I mean, I was at a teaching seminar one time, and some guy called me out for using technology. And he's like, "Schreiber, Harvey Pinnock wouldn't do this. He wouldn't have needed all this, blah, 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 blah." I'm like, "Well, I'm pretty sure Harvey Pinnock didn't have this back then." I said, but, and
True.
the guy was really overweight. And I said, and I was mean. I was like, "Bro, when you have your heart attack in 6 months, they can use whatever 2022 technology, or they can use 1960s technology. I'm pretty sure you're going to want them to use 2020. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you don't know how I use it, so don't tell me I'm an idiot without understanding what I do first, please. Because I take so much pride in what I do, dude. Like, guys trust in me with their livelihood and their family, feeding their family from what we do together and stuff like that. You better not take that lightly. I think you're not a good person if you do, and I want to be a good person more than anything. So,
Really is like a family in many ways out on the tour, is it not?
oh my gosh, yeah, without a doubt, like that, we know each other's lives so much better than our families know. At least my family, who really doesn't know what it's like to travel together, what we all go through every day. It is. It's a beautiful thing out there, that part of it. Everybody's super close, and I consider those guys out there family more than, a lot of other people in my life, for sure.
Down to our last few minutes, a couple of questions left for Adam Schreiber here on Musings on Golf. So let's talk a little bit about preparations on site. Have you and JJ, have you gone to Shinnecock Hills? Have you played some practice rounds or a practice round? And what are your initial thoughts of the golf course and how it may or may not match up to his skill set?
I think it fits us awesome, personally, and I've been saying that for a while, and it's like, so being brutally honest, as a coach, I don't know what the right play is right now, whether we take pressure off or whether I put my foot up his butt. And that's going to be a judgment call, I think, when we're back together. But he's actually playing there right now. I was there in previous open. So, and then, what we'll try and do is we'll find a local caddy. I'm going to get there Saturday night, so we'll have 4 more days of preparation. He's going to get there on Sunday, try and hunt down the best local caddy. Mark's actually trying to do that today, his caddy, because that's what we did at Oakmont. We actually had a former tour caddy that was a caddy at, it was full-time caddy at Oakmont. So he
There you go.
walked every practice round with us, and we felt awesome. You know, that's also a confidence builder. I'm like, bro, we know this golf course as good as anybody playing this week. You know, and that was a massive thing. And that's what we're going to try and get that for, you know, again for Shinnecock and again, and you know, at the British.
Yeah, at Royal Birkdale. Has he ever played? Yeah. Has he played much overseas?
No. Last year was our first time.
Yeah.
His game fits so good for over there. It really does. Like, fits so good. I mean, the kid's got all the shots. He can open up his targets. You know, he's a fader. Most people know that, but he's got the draws all day if he wants it. And he, you know, he's got trajectory control. So I love these challenges. I love the stretch that we're going into. Like, I'm super excited. You know, and I got two of my sons coming to Royal Birkdale with me, so we'll be playing golf around the tournament.
And that's great. But, yeah, before I ask the final question here, I know that you've been involved. You were involved with Gunn's high school team, and at that level, that's really important to you as well. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, well, so one of the things we did, like, so one of my friends here has three daughters. My kids are now 27. Is my youngest. Mm-hmm. So my buddy here has three daughters and they used to have to play on the boys team. So mm-hmm. 3 years ago, we started a girls team in little, this is the town I'm in. This is Elk Rapids. This is the water behind me. Yeah. Elk Rapids, Michigan, has about 10,000 people here in the winter or something like that. Like, tiny little town, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And, anyway, so we started a girls team and we actually had to recruit girls to play the first year. Like, we've seen you at the golf course. We promise it'll be fun. We'll make it fun for you. It won't be too serious, you know? And it's like, in their first year, like, this is what I dealt with first. So imagine going from the tour to this. They have, like, they're averaging, like, 40-some putts a player, right? Yeah, and I'm like, listen, girls, we got districts coming up. If you guys spend a half hour, this is the week before districts, practicing your putting, and we could average under 40 putts, just under 40, not asking a lot, you'll definitely win districts and go to state. Is state opposite the Sadie Hawkins dance?
Right.
Oh yeah. My God. How was I doing with that one? Right. So anyways, so, but
that's awesome.
I had a tough time with that.
Yeah.
So yeah, 3 years in, though, they finished third in the state this past year, our third year of the program, and my buddy's daughter finished third individually. So
isn't that great?
So
how rewarding is that for you?
I got to watch them walk on out at the halftime of a soccer game.
Yeah.
And they got their district trophy. I was crying.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
You see these nerdy little girls puff out their chest, walk out there, you know, look at us. I was crying. It was so cool. It was so freaking cool. Like, yeah, that's why I think that's why you end up coaching. I don't know what that gene is. My mom had it. My mom was the most selfless. My mom was a teacher, probably the most selfless person I know, you know, and just gave. And so many people, you know, if I go to any high school reunion, all they want to talk about is my mom, which is really cool. Yeah. Which is really heartwarming, man. How she made the difference in their lives. And
with you and your three siblings. Yeah. Would you have three brothers?
I have two sisters and a brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm the accident 5 years after they stopped having kids. But it's been a heck of a journey, and you know, hope the best is yet to come. And yeah, you know, it's I'm very fortunate.
Well, I would, I'd be thrilled. I think for a lot of people, be thrilled to see if you had another a viral moment at Shinnecock Hills, much like you had at Oakmont. Well, hey, this is great,
we're
a great discussion.
Playing that seed.
Yeah, absolutely.
He definitely has
like
that ability. You know.
All right, let's wrap this up. I always ask the question at the end. I know you're paired on this of three people who you'd play that dream round of golf with, whether they're living or deceased, and where you would go play. So, Adam Schreiber, I'll throw it out to you.
Yeah, I mean, so two people that had the most amazing influence on my life were Dennis Perdue, who was a high school coach at another school, And you know, my dad passed away, I think I was 13. And my mom must have called him. I must have been 15 or 16, and I was definitely going the wrong way. You know, I lost my best friend 6 months before that, maybe, and was starting to run with all the wrong crowd. And she called him and said, you know my kid, can you rein him in? And everybody knew me because I was a pretty good athlete. I was pretty good at sports for some odd reason. And he wasn't even at my school, but like the guy would wore me out to keep me in line, made me go play with these other guys. And he was cool. Like he was the football coach and the golf coach, and he could play, and he played college football. So it was like somebody I would like look up to. You know what I mean? And yeah. So like Dennis was a massive influence, and he was part of this group of 40 guys that were at the local Muni, Orangebrook, that you couldn't tell if they were millionaires or dirt poor, but it was, high school coaches, firemen, cops, mailmen, business owners that were millionaires, and they traveled together to Scotland every 2 years. But they helped Mike Donald, who was like 10 years older than me, and put Mike Donald on tour. And these guys all raised $4,000 when I turned pro and gave me a little pickup truck and sent me on the road. And that was pretty hilarious. But I made it like 5 years playing the mini tours on $4,000. But the other one would have been Mickey Dillard, who's about the coolest guy I know. My mom tutored his kid in math. His kid was a phenomenal basketball player, played like 7 years in the NBA. But Mickey was like coached basketball, was one of the first black guys to play on the PGA tour, could hit it three over 300 with wooden woods. And you were like, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, he was the best player around. And had this little compact swing and smashed, and was friends with Charlie Sifford and Chuck Thorpe and Jim Thorpe, and I'd see all these guys playing. And so Mickey would take me around when I was like a junior and senior in high school and play money games against two pros. And it was my
That's sharpened
he'd
you
be
good.
like, "Hey, you want to go play Jacaranda?" I was like, "Yeah," because I couldn't play good golf courses. You want to go play Colony West? Or, I remember I shot 66 at PGA National. I was 17, and
Jeez.
He flipped me like $20 if I played good, and he flipped me $100 that day, and I was like, "Oh my God!" And I knew he was playing for something, but I think he said he won $40,000 that day.
Oh my God.
But he's like, and I was like, and he only gave me 100. He's like, dude, did you ever pay?
That's
I was like, yeah, if you knew what we were playing for, you would not have performed well.
right, exactly. Who would your third be, and where would you go play?
Yeah, the third would be a guy named Ron Kesterson. And Ron was, he's a family that took me in after my dad passed. They were members at Jacaranda Country Club. His family took me in. We played on the high school golf team together. Ron ended up dying the next year in a car accident. And yeah, I'd go Friday night to his house at Jacaranda. My mom wouldn't see me till Sunday night, and we'd wake up as soon as the sun came up and be out there till it went down, and we'd play and practice as much as we could, and we both thought we were gonna be the next thing on tour, He was about the goofiest, nicest kid I knew.
Where would you go and play with those three in
I think
that
we'd
kind of
go play
round?
the Brook. We'd go play the Muni, Because that's where it all began. As much as, I'd love to say Augusta or something like that, but it doesn't fit there. That's where it fits,
No. You know this. Our game has so many different ways to appreciate it, and so many different layers to it that make it special. And hearing what you're talking about, to me, it still comes back to the people. And I think I mentioned earlier to you about that sort of the relationship you have with JJ. It's beyond just the mechanics of the swing. It has to be a
Oh, yeah,
personal
sure.
relationship, right?
Yeah, it does, especially as much time as you spend together, and like getting him over the mental hurdles is I think, been as impactful as everything I've done for golf. I think any great athlete, and I hear him talk about this in interviews now, and it makes me super happy because I believe it's something I introduced to him.
Yeah.
I think is giving yourself the permission to fail.
Yeah, you were saying.
Like, dude, if you're ever going to reach your potential, I remember Anthony Kim saying to me at 15 years old, he hit it in the water, or hit it behind a tree on 18 at Doral, trying to not hit it in the water. Lost player of the year. He's like, Schreiber, that's the last time I try and not hit a ball somewhere. He's like, I can live with myself if I go down trying to hit the shot I want to hit.
There you go.
But
right.
If I try and not do something, I can't forgive that guy. He says, you're not saying anything. I'm like, bro, guys play 30 years on tour and they never get to that point. If you can do that, that's absolute genius. Please do that. You know, so.
Adam, this has been a genius of an interview. I appreciate it very much. For people who want to learn about you as an instructor, where AdamSchreiberGolf.com, is that right?
Yeah, I think there's actually supposed to be an article in Golf Mag this month on me and my son traveling in the Airstream. And then
I think
there's some stuff on golf.com about it. But yeah, I guess. And, you know, through Lock and Heath. But we'll see where we end up. I just applied for the director of instruction at Desert Mountain, which is
a
job that just recently opened up.
Yeah.
And my youngest son's teaching with me now. So I feel like the luckiest dad on the planet. Right. And I'm as focused on setting up his future as I am kind of riding off into the sunset the right way and peaking my, I don't think you'll ever retire when you're a coach. You continually coach forever. So.
And Adam, how crazy would it be to have another Father's Day crowning US Open champion in this time at Shinnecock Hills? Huh?
Yeah, I'm planting that seed and I certainly think it's within reach. And, you know, he's absolutely flushing right now. So I'm excited.
We wish you the very, very best in the week ahead and certainly throughout the rest of the year. Adam Schreiber, thank you so much for a fabulous interview here on Musings on Golf.
Thanks, Kelly. I really appreciate it.
You know, I hope you really enjoyed what I consider a deep look into what it takes to teach and to nurture and develop, in this case, a U.S. Open champ. A lot of respect for Adam Schreiber, a lot of respect for J.J. Spahn. It's going to be exciting to see as J.J. defends his title next week at Shinnecock Hills. Speaking of next week, John Bodenhamer. John is the Chief Championships Officer for the United States Golf Association. It's his responsibility to set up major championship tests for the USGA. Boy, does he know about Shinnecock Hills, the challenges, the nuances, what it's like to set up one of golf's great venues at Shinnecock Hills for the 126th United States Open Golf Championship. Thanking you once again for joining us on Musings on Golf.